all across Wisconsin from Civic Media. This is Up North News Radio. Now, live from our Lake Wissota studio, here's the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Breitlove.
Thank you, Don, and welcome back to the second hour of Up North News Radio for this Wednesday morning. And I'm joined right out of the gate by a couple of my Courier Newsroom colleagues. As I've explained before, Up North News is owned by Courier Newsroom with state-based outlets all across the country, including The Gander in Michigan and Iowa Starting Line, coincidentally, in Iowa. And joining me now are political correspondents from each of those outlets. Ty Russian's here from Iowa. Kyle Kaminsky is here from Michigan. Guys, good morning. Thank you for being here.
Morning. Thanks for having us.
Hey, you know, if we were sitting at a Courier retreat right now and we were, you know, at some nearby watering hole, and I was saying to you, how have your legislative sessions been, you know, this year? I know based on the coverage and the internal traffic, you guys have gone in two very different directions in your state. And so I thought this would be a good opportunity to finally have some of my colleagues on and talk about what has happened in Iowa versus what has happened in Michigan. Because in both cases, you know, Wisconsin could go either way on a host of these issues. And so much depends on not only getting new maps in Wisconsin with a new Supreme Court, but of course the election results in 2024. So you should be listening very carefully to what Ty and Kyle are going to be telling us here, as it might really have much to say about what 2025 looks like here in the state of Wisconsin. I'm going to start first with reproductive rights and abortion access, simply because we've talked about that the most lately. There's been a major development in Iowa. Iowa's got this now, this six-week ban. Ty, you know, we already knew that Republicans had control of Iowa government by and large. So what was it that brought up a special session to put on a ban that is basically a near total abortion ban? How did that come about?
Yes. And let me clarify real quick. As of yesterday, abortion is legal again in Iowa because of an injunction from a district court judge.
Good
so
point.
Abortion is still legal up to 20 weeks here in Iowa.
Okay.
So basically what happened was 5 years ago, Iowa Republicans under Governor Kim Reynolds signed a six-week abortion ban. This happened in 2018, and it's been in the courts ever since. And so with Roe last year, that opened up a new angle in the Iowa Supreme Court. You know, fast forward to this year, the Iowa Supreme Court ruled that, last year, they ruled that an abortion is not a constitutional right in the state. And then last month, in another ruling, it was a 3-3 decision where they basically upheld a lower court's ruling that kept abortion legal in the state. Well, this is 3-3. We have 7 justices. One justice recused herself because she worked for a law firm that represented one of the plaintiffs, which was Abortion Providers versus the state of Iowa. Basically, the governor did not like how that ruling went because it was 3-3. Abortion remained legal. Her 2018 law never went into effect. And so she called for a special session, which we had in one day last Tuesday, where the GOP-led legislature passed the new six-week ban, although they didn't call it a six-week ban. So they this time around, they didn't include the six-week description, but they used it was basically the same bill that got rejected by the courts already. And so on Friday, during a evangelical Christian summit with 6 presidential candidates in the building, Reynolds signed the new ban. And so abortion was pretty much banned over the weekend. And then on Monday, a district court judge issued a ruling putting a temporary injunction on that. And so now we're just kind of in wait and see mode, but abortion is again legal.
So here's a word you're going to hear a lot during our interview here. Meanwhile, in Michigan, Kyle, what was the status of women's health care rights by the time the Michigan legislature got done working on things?
Well, legality is no longer an issue. I mean, we passed Proposal 3 last year in November, effectively cemented reproductive freedoms into the state constitution. So our lawmakers went to work pretty quickly, repealing an archaic abortion ban that was on the books that couldn't even be enforced after that proposal was passed. And now it's really about focusing on ensuring that it's not only legal, but is it meaningfully accessible? So lawmakers, after a brief summer recess here, are going to come back to the table and try to find ways to make it more accessible, eliminating mandatory waiting periods, eliminating parental consent laws, changing facility licensing requirements to get rid of some of the deserts that are out there where it's still accessible, but might be a few hours drive away. So yeah, quite the opposite picture here in Michigan than what you're painting in Iowa there.
Yes, very different. And we're going to continue to hear about the differences on some other subjects when we come back from the break, especially as they relate to education, the LGBTQ communities, and other areas. So stick around for more of that with Kyle Kaminsky from The Gander. You'll find that at gandernewsroom.com, and Ty Rushing from Iowa Starting Line, iowastartingline.com, both properties of Courier Newsroom, as is Up North News. But rather than throw in another question and run out of time, let me take us up to the break by letting you know some of the temperatures around here before we're joined by Weatherology. Pretty consistent temperatures around the state right now. It's 57 degrees up here on Lake Wissota. It is 59 in Wausau. Oshkosh, 62. Madison reporting 62 degrees. 63 in Green Bay, and Amory reporting 61 degrees. As for the Brewers, they lost to the Phillies by a score of 4-3 last night. The Philly starter Aaron Nola pitched into the eighth inning and actually sat down the first 14 Brewers in order. The Phillies won their fourth straight game. That broke the Brewers' four-game win streak, but they will pick it up this evening. Colin Ray on the mound. If you're in the Fox Valley, you can hear the Brewers by listening to Oshkosh Air Support, 98.3 FM and 1100 AM. And around Richland Center, listen to WRCE News from the Center, 107.7 FM, 1450 AM. Again, full Weatherology forecast details coming up, and then more with our guests from Iowa and Michigan. Wherever you are, you're up north.
There's nothing halfway. How about the Iowa way to treat you when we treat you, which we may not do at all.
There's an Iowa kind of special chip on the shoulder attitude he'd never been without
that we recall.
I knew that there'd be an Iowa song from the Music Man. If there's a quintessential Michigan song, I didn't have time to find it, so I might have to get that, Kyle, for your next visit here. We'll resume that conversation about what's happening in Michigan and Iowa coming up in just a bit. But right now, some showers and thunderstorms moving into northwest Wisconsin. A little lightning indicated on the radar here by Medford. Let's see what things look like for the entire state of Wisconsin forecast. And for that, Jennifer Wojcicki from Weatherology joins us to give us all those details. Jennifer, good morning.
Good morning. Yeah, well, as you mentioned, it's an interesting day today with a fine line between where there might not be chances for showers today. It does look like sunny skies expected for the southern parts of the state today, Richland Center over to Milwaukee. A slight chance for showers in the morning from Oshkosh to Wisconsin Rapids, Baldwin, looking at a chance for some showers and storms coming in the late afternoon hours. Then a chance for showers and storms scattered throughout the day from Amory to Wausau, so kind of all over the place today. Temperature-wise, pretty average for everyone, getting into the low to mid-80s this afternoon. Chance for storms across the board tonight. Along with that, it does look like a marginal to a slight risk for severe weather for nearly everyone today and or tonight, with the exception of Madison, Waukesha, and Milwaukee. So definitely something we'll keep you posted on throughout the day and evening hours. Thursday looks like a slight chance for showers and storms from Wausau down to Milwaukee, otherwise becoming sunny for everyone else. Slightly cooler across the board as a cold front comes in, highs in the mid to upper 70s primarily, a few getting into the lower 80s in the south. Friday, back to the 80s, around 80 for everyone, sunny skies expected as well. Then for the weekend, it does look like slight chances for showers and storms, both Saturday and Sunday for everyone, with highs, again, pretty average around about the mid to lower 80s.
It was sad to finally put the top back up on the Jeep after so long of being able to drive with it down. But again, just enough rain in the forecast to, want to make sure that you don't get rained on while you're driving around Wisconsin, no matter how nice it is. Driving in the rain, not quite on my top 10 list. Jennifer, thank you so much for the update. Hope you have a great day.
You too.
All right, Jennifer Wojcicki from Weatherology joining us there. And a reminder that coming up in our next half hour, despite a compromise that gave more state funding to public schools overall, some school districts are still going to see less state aid next year. How can that be? Well, we will talk to somebody from the Wisconsin Public Education Network and the superintendent and business manager from one large Wisconsin school district who will tell us all about that coming up in our next half hour. And we are back now with Kyle Kaminsky from the Gander in Michigan and Ty Rushing from Iowa Starting Line. Like Up North News, they are all part of the Courier Newsroom family. I know you've heard us talk to Kia Vakil every Friday, our national correspondent out in California. Figured it was long past time we heard from a couple of our Midwestern friends about what the legislative sessions have been like in one state that is solidly Republican and one in Michigan where Democrats took control of the legislature and already had the governor's office. All right, guys, we talked about access to abortion. Let's talk about gun safety or gun rights or gun, however you want to phrase it. And this time we're going to start with Michigan. Kyle, what happened in the area of gun safety in the Michigan legislature this year so far?
Well, this one's kind of personal to Michigan. We had a mass shooting earlier this year at Michigan State University, and lawmakers really used that as the impetus to get to work on some kind of common sense gun safety proposals that have been thrown around for a few years now, stalled under Republican leadership. But we have laws signed now by the governor, including new universal background checks for everybody and safe storage laws, ensuring that guns stay out of the hands of children. There's some additional legislation that could create some extreme risk protection orders on deck, and that's going to be reviewed in the fall by the Senate. And also working on expanding limitations for those who have been convicted of domestic violence. In Michigan, if you have a felony conviction for domestic violence, you cannot own a firearm. The legislature is looking at expanding that to include misdemeanor convictions, as well as the create a voluntary registry for those who might not feel comfortable owning a firearm. If they're at risk of suicide, they can volunteer to put themselves on a list that says, don't sell me guns. And this would all be voluntary, but really just anything we can to keep guns out of the hands of those that might pose a danger to themselves or others, and trying to go about it in a way that respects people's rights as well.
Meanwhile, in Iowa, what kind of gun legislation have we had there, Ty?
Well, you know, Kyle said something interesting about keeping guns out of the hands of children. Well, there's a bill, it only passed one chamber, the Iowa House, but this bill would have implemented NRA curriculum in our K-12 schools. But that's not all. I had to go look it up just because it was so long. So, oh man, this bill would have also allowed people who have valid concealed carry permits to keep guns on them on school property outside of the school building itself, as long as the firearms are not visible. Oof. And so you would also, the schools would also be able to authorize a person to carry, transport, or possess a firearm or ammunition in a school vehicle. So guess what? Your bus driver can pack heat under this bill.
Oh boy. Okay. So there you go. There's the difference on gun legislation.
I think it's worth noting, you know, the Republicans in our state are not sitting around. They're actively trying to propose these similar laws. There was one to allow weapons on college campuses just the other week. So in a different leadership structure, these things, we might be looking a lot more like Iowa.
That was in the bill too. That was in the Iowa bill as well.
Of course it was. So again, our underlying theme here is elections have consequences, which takes us now to the topic of child labor, and then we'll move into education as well. And we're going to start with Iowa this time. Child labor is something that we talked about this on the show a couple of weeks back, that Wisconsin Republicans are looking to expand it, and sure is happening in Iowa as well, right, Ty?
Oh, absolutely. And what's wild is that the bill, it's law now. It's law here in Iowa, but it's not as egregious as it used to be.
Oh, well, okay.
Before, there were no penalties to employers if a child worker was injured or killed on the job. And it also allowed them to work in more hazardous conditions, like kids could work in, it literally said mining with exceptions, meat packing plants.
Come on.
I was just about to make the coal mine joke. Kids are going back to the mines.
Jeepers. Okay. Kyle, meanwhile, in Michigan, child labor?
You know, I'm not hearing a lot of chatter about trying to send the kids to the coal mines in Michigan if we have coal mines. But, you know, a lot of it's there was some legislation introduced to ramp up penalties for those employers that are caught in child labor violations. Not exactly sure where that stands now. To be honest, I've been focusing too much on the education budget. And
you mean where the kids are supposed to be? Sure.
All right. So in our public schools rather than the workplace.
Right. So the kids are supposed to be in school in Michigan. Well, what would you, how would you describe the overall view of education spending and support from the Michigan legislature so far this year?
Record setting is a good word to describe it because it's literally setting records, 5% increase in per pupil funding this year, additional $200 million for at-risk students. That brings up an extra $458 per student in this year's budget compared to last year. So it's, yeah, definitely a focus for the legislature and the governor.
Meanwhile, in Iowa, I'm thinking both the Iowa state flag and the Wisconsin state flag, if Republicans get their way, the state flag is going to include a voucher right on there, Ty, right after this year?
Oh, absolutely. Now, so in Iowa, they don't call it a voucher program. It's a voucher program in everything but name. So it's called the Students First Education Savings Account. And right now, if every student who applied for that is approved, there was 29,000. That would be $221 million for Iowa taxpayers in the next school year. And so the first 2 years of the program have restrictions. But after that, anyone, no matter how much money your family makes, is able to apply for this program. And you're going to get the same amount of money from the state to send your kid to private school that the state is giving to every student in the state, like who goes to public schools. And again, that's going to be open to anyone within 2 years. So, yeah, things are going great here.
We're talking to Ty Rushing there from Iowa Starting Line and Kyle Kaminsky from The Gander in Michigan. Like Up North News, they are properties of Courier Newsroom, and we're very happy to have you guys here. Let's move on to the topic of our LGBTQ communities, and we'll start first in Iowa this time and asking if there were any expansion of rights, rollback of rights, any discussion about anything that would affect populations there, Ty.
Pat, you're going to be surprised to hear this. There were, but it wasn't about expanding rights. More than 30 anti-LGBTQ bills were introduced this session, wow, including a bill to including the bill to re-outlaw gay marriage, which would supersede federal law. Okay. You know, obviously that bill went nowhere, but bills that ban gender-affirming care for trans and non-binary minors, that's now law. We have another law that says trans and non-binary kids can't use the restroom they identify with, the restroom or locker room they identify with at school. We also had a massive education bill sponsored by the governor that focused on removing LGBTQ student rights. So it has don't say gay in there, don't say trans in there, book banning. It also removes education about HIV and AIDS curriculum. So a lot was happening here.
Kyle, I'm almost out of time, so I'll do it one last time. Meanwhile, in Michigan.
Pat, we have the largest number of LGBTQ lawmakers ever serving in the history of state government in Michigan. So, of course, it's moving in the other direction here. We have expansions to state civil rights laws specifically to include sexual orientation, gender identity, expression. Some additional legislation that would make it easier to prosecute hate crimes.
It's fair to say, if you head over to gandernewsroom.com or to the Iowa Starting Line website, you're going to learn a lot, and hopefully that'll impact the questions you ask of your candidates and elected officials here in Wisconsin. Kyle Kaminsky, Ty Rushing, thank you so much. Let's do it again sometime when we can level the field a little bit for poor Ty. Thanks, guys. Well, it would be helpful, but I think a lot's going to have to change in Iowa elections before that happens. Now, along with what the guys told me about the legislatures that they cover, there's also been news out of Michigan on a different front and a much more serious front. We don't have a comparison to Iowa there because, near as we can tell, former President Donald Trump didn't try to rig Iowa's election, but did try to rig the numbers coming out of both Michigan and Wisconsin and a couple of other states as part of a scheme that involved fake electors. And to that end, in Michigan, the attorney general there, Dana Nessel, on Tuesday filed felony charges against the 16 Michigan fake electors. Those charges include election law forgery, conspiracy to commit election law forgery, other related counts. For each charge, the maximum penalties range from 5 to 14 years in prison. And that's because Trump's campaign, led by Rudy Giuliani at the time in late 2020, helped organize a series of fake elector slates in Michigan, Wisconsin, and elsewhere. In Wisconsin, one of the fake electors Robert Spindell, is still a member of the Wisconsin Elections Commission. He was reappointed to that seat by Devin LeMahieu, the state Senate Republican leader, even after it had been revealed that Spindell was one of the fake electors. He and the others and the ones in Michigan signed multiple certificates stating that they were, quote, the duly elected and qualified electors for president and vice president of the United States of America for the state of Wisconsin or Michigan, as the case may be. And now in Michigan, those fake electors are facing felony charges. We await to see what will happen in the Wisconsin case. Coming up next, we will hear from school officials in Beloit, one of the districts that's going to get less state aid next year, despite a big infusion of cash into public schools overall in Wisconsin. We'll find out how that can be coming up in just a bit. This is Up North News Radio for a Wednesday.
Brought to you by the Ad Council.
Welcome back to Up North News Radio for this Wednesday morning. I'm Pat Kreitlow, and we're going to be talking in this segment a bit about school funding and the basically the whole setup of how a school district or some school districts around the state, I should say, are facing the prospect of less state aid, even though all of the talk lately has been about this compromise deal between Governor Tony Evers and legislative Republicans, all about leading to an overall increase in school aid, but that's not going to hit all the school districts equally. And so nobody should be under the impression that there's going to be, you know, financial harmony across all district lines. That's not going to be the case at all. A familiar guest here, Heather Dubois-Bornon from the Wisconsin Public Education Network is with us. Dr. Willie Garrison, superintendent of the Beloit School District, is with us. And Bob Chady, the business manager for the Beloit School District, joins us on the phone, I believe. Bob, I'm going to turn to you first just to make sure that you're there. Are you with us this morning?
Yeah, good morning, Pat. Pleasure to be here.
Yeah, nice to have you here. Dr. Garrison, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you. Thank you so much for being here.
And Heather, thanks for riding shotgun here as well, because we want to talk primarily about what's happening in the Beloit district, what challenges they faced, but you're going to help fill us in as well that it's far from an isolated incident that some school districts are not going to benefit as much under this scenario. In fact, Heather, let me start with you just from a general standpoint, because it was in the Wisconsin Public Education Network's reaction to the school funding deal between the governor and legislative Republicans, where you noted that this is not going to benefit every school district. Some are going to have to make do with a little less. Heather, how extensive is that going to be?
It's going to be really extensive. And thanks for having me this morning to explore this a little more deeply, because I think it is a little bit confusing. But basically, because of the amount of aid that is actually going into the pot as new spendable aid for public schools, that amount, you know, is, you know, slightly less than $1 billion overall. The way that aid is distributed across districts is subject to a formula that is at its own heart kind of unfair. And because districts are also subject to revenue limits, which are actually spending limits in varying amounts across the state, which also don't really make much sense or match the needs of those districts, we have real disparities across the state in who gets how much. So if you look at the chart that the DPI released a couple weeks ago that has estimates of this fall's aid numbers, you'll see 39% of school districts this fall are going to be going back to school with less aid than they had the previous year. And let's keep in mind that last year and the year before, districts were frozen with $0 in new spending from the last budget. And so they're kind of coming out of a cycle where they were already struggling and facing significant challenges. Now, the 40% of our districts will be going back to school with less. Of the 60% that are getting the same or more, very few are reaching, you know, that kind of high watermark that looked like they'd have a lot more in spendable aid from early thinking or projections. So that, you know, that's kind of problem A. And then problem B has to do with about 30 districts, slightly less, that are ineligible for an increase to what's called the low revenue limit ceiling. And I think our friends from Beloit can give you a specific example of that. But basically what that was an attempt to raise the limit that low spending districts could spend in this budget to $11,000, which is still $1,000 less than the state average, but would help a lot of those lower spending districts. However, because of a clause in state statute that says if you've had a referendum that's failed in the past 3 years, you wouldn't be eligible for that aid. There are some districts that are hit especially hard by both of these factors. And that's something that I think is very troubling. And we're hearing lots of reports of districts that are facing really serious budget uncertainty and facing hard decisions as they plan forward for the next 2 years.
Well, let's turn to Dr. Garrison then. And Mr. Chady about that as well. And Dr. Garrison, to put it to you first, it's one thing to talk about overall dollars, and there's no doubt that the overall deal put more overall dollars. But then when you start talking about funding formulas and algorithms and special circumstances about referenda, it certainly does divide that pie in many different ways. And I'm just curious as to your interpretation of how the Beloit School District's slice of the pie is impacted by this arrangement that was met this year. Does it meet the needs of the children and educators in Beloit?
You know, again, first of all, thank you, Pat, for having me, Mr. Creelo, for having us, and of course, Heather, for your commentary here in the beginning. Let me just share this again. Not all districts are created equal. All right, let's just start there. Unfortunately, the state, in many different ways, has tried to help and support this biennial budget. No one is saying that they didn't try. But in this case, what was presented actually hurt the school district of Beloit. And not just the school district of Beloit, but other districts as well that falls into this category where you have a high poverty and or when you have a district that that has certain revenue limits and per pupil expenditures. And these themes all combine together and put into legislation in certain ways based off of certain writings, in this case, actually hurt the school district of Beloit. Now, one could argue again that this is really about two key legislations. Number one, the 2023 Wisconsin Act 11, which pretty much said they're going to increase the low revenue limit ceiling and increase per pupil payments. Okay. Then another one was the 2023 Wisconsin Act 19, which pretty much said, okay, now we're going to also increase that per pupil limit increase per student by $325. Okay. Now, one could say, well, we're going to give you $325, right? We're going to give you $325 additional to per every student. This should help you. But just like everything in the school district, that's based off of course, numbers, right? And when I say numbers, when you have increase in enrollment or decrease in enrollment, it's still based off of numbers. So you get that based off of how many kids you have. Regardless, as you can tell, everything goes up. Prices of insurances goes up, salaries go up. You know, every year services for our students go up. And you see that $325 now start looking like, okay, well, it's going to disappear. When you put it all in a nutshell as well, there's also some clauses in this state legislation that actually really do hurt us. When you say the 2017 Act 141, that pretty much prevents us from getting this a lot, in this case, over $600 for us because we had a failed referenda. So failed referenda, no increase.
So you're penalized for asking voters for help and the voters said no. And as a result, it sounds like you're getting penalized for that.
That is true. And so what I like to do is I like to try to make it as simple as everybody can get it. In this case, since we had a failed referenda, now we won't get that extra money.
Bob Chady, would you want to add a little bit more about, first off, as a business manager or anybody who works in school finance, I don't know how you keep track of all this, but needless to say, it's your job to. And, you know, what would you add to what Dr. Garrison had to say?
Yeah, I would echo the financial impact to the school district of Beloit, in particular as a result of Act 11 here, which was essentially the shared revenue agreement that the governor's office reached with the legislature to help municipalities. And as part of that, you know, there was some language put in there about helping schools as well, all kind of made some sense, with the exception of the fact that I think a previous state law was somewhat overlooked in that process, and that law prohibits those districts that have not been successful with an operating referendum to be able to take advantage of that per pupil increase in the revenue limit to the $11,000 mark. There's 28 districts in the state that have a failed operational referendum that are impacted. 20 of those districts are actually impacted financially, and nobody more so than the school district of Beloit. We miss out on $4 million of revenue opportunity in each of the next 3 years unless we go back to the electors and they would approve an increase in the operational referendum to exceed the revenue limits. So not only do we miss out on $4 million of revenue opportunity, but as part of that Act 11, per pupil expenditure amounts were increased for those students that were electing private school choice programs, special needs scholarship programs, or attendance at independent charter schools. Here in the school district of Beloit, we estimate that expenditures for our local students utilizing those educational opportunities are going to increase our expenses by over $2 million. So not only do we miss out on $4 million of revenue this current school year, but we also have a $2 plus million in expenditure anticipated. So it's a $6 million hit. That's rather sizable on a district of any size.
So you know, I was going to say, Bob, let me turn to Dr. Garrison and say, okay, we've talked a lot about the raw numbers, but translate that for us, if you will, into the students and into the educators. What is going to be the impact there?
It's a huge impact, right? And so all state superintendents want to serve our students at the highest level, right? And give them everything that they need in order to be successful. You know, since we are in this case, we received a little over $10,000. $50 per student, another very low aid from a state perspective, but we also receive a lot of different aids due to that we have some high poverty here. And so how does that impact us? Well, number one, you say four times three, that's $12 million. That's $12 million that we would not be able to put back into our kids. Okay. That's $12 million we would not be able to put back into our kids. There are also other clauses that also kind of ding us in this conversation. Number one, we also have the there's a clause, I think it, and forgive me if I'm wrong about this part. Well, actually, Bob is here; he'll correct me. there's another clause that we won't get where we are, since we're a high poverty aid district. They also in Wisconsin Act 19, I want to say, it was called a high poverty aid. Extra opportunity for districts who have high poverty. They also took that off the table. So for us, that's to the tune of another $341,000. Okay. So even if we have a high poverty aid school district, they took that off the table as well. We will not get that opportunity to serve our kids. So now you say $341,000 forever times the $4 million for 3 years. You can see how this is continuously impacting us over time.
Heather, you said that high poverty aid's been eliminated entirely. Is that the case?
Yeah, that was one of the things that was just flat out removed in this budget. And I think, you know, what's really being drawn out here are all the ways some of the districts who really need state support the most are getting nickeled and dimed by these moves in a way that's going to have dramatic negative impacts on our kids. And to put this into perspective, since I think revenue limit talk is a little confusing, what we're really dealing with here is the fact that a school district like Beloit is only allowed by the state to spend about you know, $10,000 per student, whereas there are other districts in the state that are allowed to spend over twice that. And so we're creating disparities with moves like this that just widen existing gaps and make existing problems and disparities so much worse. That's why we oppose the budget overall, because we are in a position as a state where we could have made real strides toward closing those gaps. And instead, we've done things that are only going to make some of our existing problems worse. Wisconsin has too many serious challenges right now to fool around with this kind of budgeting. We need to focus our attention and our resources on meeting kids where they are and really providing districts with the support they need to do that.
Can I just add then in closing here that just in closing, because I don't feel like it gets said enough. We had a $7 billion surplus, and this is what the legislature chose to do with it. We have great guests. Our time passed far too quickly. Dr. Willie Garrison, superintendent in Beloit, Bob Chady, the business manager, Heather Dubois-Bornan from Wisconsin Public Education Network. Thank you for helping us continue to shine a light on this. And we do want to do a follow-up with you real soon. Thanks again for your time today.
Thank you so much.
All right. When we come back, we will talk to Todd Alba. I'm sure he's covering this and more on the Todd Alba Show. Details coming up. You're up north.
Mad Radio 92.7 WMDX has a new starting lineup. 12:15 Town Call, 1 p.m. The Todd Alba Show on Mad Radio 92.7 WMDX.
Gotta tell you, this has been one busy morning here with all the various guests that we've had and topics, and I feel like even after 15 minutes with our guests there, we only scratched the surface and really want to try to explain in as great a detail as possible and also in as much plain English as possible, just what the situation is with the way that schools are funded. It is not, I mean, the state constitution calls for the education of our children to be, you know, as uniform as practicable. And yet that's not a situation that we see here at all in Wisconsin. And, you know, Todd Alba, who talked about this as well, joins us now on the phone lines. And Todd, I think if there were any one topic that couldn't be beaten over the head enough with some members of the legislature, is that these are not just numbers in a budget document. This is how we educate or choose not to educate our children.
Morning, Pat. Yeah, I first of all, I'm not sure what's called the gremlins in the system, but the StreamYard duck has iced me out. So thank God for Ma Bell on the phone lines. But yeah, you're absolutely no right. you're absolutely right that, yeah, I mean, you were a member of the legislature. You get it. And when you're dealing with all these numbers and budgets and whatnot, it's not just that. And everything that folks like you and now who are there actually in the legislature still, every time they make a vote, when you made a vote, when you were there, it affects people's lives. People like you got that and get that. But unfortunately, a lot of the folks on the Republican side of the aisle just seem to, I think they get it. I think it's even more sadder than that. I don't think they care.
No, they don't. And I wasn't going to necessarily put my guests in that position. Although if the conversation had gone on long enough, I would say to what degree this isn't mere oversight. This is an actual attack on public education and an effort to, again, much like they do with all things public transportation, public parks, public schools. If you smother it enough, then, you know, the private sector benefits, but so many other regular people do not.
Yeah. And we've had the folks from the Public Education Network on our show. You've been on top as well. You've been on Kristen's show. And I think this is key, because I think as more people hear information like your guest just had, and when we get that out and disseminate it, I think people are like, oh, really? So this isn't normal? Because I think people like you and I are constantly consuming news. There are people out there in the real world who, you know, don't consume quite as much. And I think it's just important to highlight things like you're doing this morning, because the more information we get out there, I think people will apply it and say, well, in our community, whether it's Chippewa Falls or whether it's Richland Center or Green Bay or wherever folks are at, they're like, well, that's not how we do things here. And I think, isn't the irony, Pat, for years, Republicans said, you know, decisions are best made back home, not in Madison, in Washington, D.C. And now they've captured, now they've captured control of legislature via gerrymandering. Suddenly, they don't really go along with that, do they?
and look, I guarantee 1,000% that if when Democrats take control of the legislature and the governor again, but there are enough school boards and county boards, you know, in the hands of conservatives, that we'll hear this all over again, like, oh, you should trust the people at the local level. And again, it's right. Such a game to them, unfortunately. I recall being in the legislature, and again, we talked about all these different categories of aid, because you're trying to, people say, why don't you just give every kid $10,000? Well, again, $10,000 goes a lot farther in some places and a lot less in others. So there was a category that was created during my time in the legislature called sparsity aid. And all that meant mm-hmm. was a school bus has got to drive so much farther in a rural district, burn that much gas, wear and tear on the bus. And then other factors that lead to when your school district is sparse, when there's more distance between the kids, there's a higher cost that's involved in that. And so you try to account for that. And so there isn't any one single right way to do it, but there are a whole lot of bad ways. And we can't help but have a legislature that keeps showing off all the wrong ways to fund something, because it comes back to perhaps one of my biggest rules of government is those who hate government the most should be trusted least to run it efficiently, because they're going to try to tear it down.
That's pretty darn good. One of the ironies, a little bit of an irony, that you wouldn't need sparsity aid, or you have a lot less need for it, if you'd simply fund schools the way they needed to be funded, especially with a $4 billion surplus now. And I think here's what I think, Pat. You see what you think. Where places like we come from, more rural Wisconsin, you know that the school districts, in some cases the high school or the school, is the community. I think of Ithaca, just outside of Richland Center in southwest Wisconsin. There is the school building, and then there's a bar and a few houses, and the town hall. That is the community. And if Republicans keep defunding schools, you're going to see these smaller districts close and or consolidate, and communities will lose their identity. I wonder how many people listening to us this morning are prepared to have their football team or their baseball team or their basketball team defunded, because that's what's coming.
It is. And, you know, a community's identity is at stake in a lot of these cases, you know, throughout parts of rural Wisconsin. And yet they're the ones who have legislators who seem to be working the hardest to undermine the education in their district, which does nothing more than chase away some of the best and brightest. And that brain drain and that loss of generational talent is something we've been talking about for a long time in the state. And yet far too many of our so-called leaders are downright hostile to the notion of trying to, you know, retain our best and brightest here. And it's a damn shame, but you know, it's one we can only continue to talk about and hope that people will see and take action on it. So yesterday I was spending time, with Chad Holmes and talking about how surprised I was at him, that he was a World Series of Poker tournament participant, yes, and that he was at one recently. That never had come up in our previous conversations. And so in my final 30 seconds here with you, Todd, what secrets don't I know about you?
I try to live by the Kenny Rogers rule. I love to try to remember, know when to hold them, know when to fold them, and know when to walk away, and know when to run.
That's your secret? Your secret talent is cliched song lyrics. Okay,
I'm a pretty transparent person. You know,
I asked this just for the uncomfortable laugh, just to go, my secrets, what do you mean? There's nothing here.
I don't know.
You think about it. I'm bringing this up next week, because I think we're just going to make this a segment where we just kind of surprise each other with a little tidbit, something that you and I don't know about each other. It's kind of like long distance dating, but in a weird radio host kind of way. All right. Todd Alba, you'll hear him this afternoon. Statewide. I'll be back in 2 and 2. Thank you, Todd. All right, y'all have a great day out there. We will see you tomorrow up here on Lake Wissota, where it's always a beautiful day up north.